D.
A show that discusses what a disaster dating can be once you hit your 30s. Candace Lauren and Kimmy So Brooklyn will share their insights, stories, and humor while keeping faith in one day walking down the aisle. Pray for them, y'all.
Another dating disaster.
A show that discusses what a disaster dating can be once you hit your 30s. Candace Lauren and Kimmy So Brooklyn will share their insights, stories, and humor while keeping faith in one day walking down the aisle. Pray for them, y'all.
Awesome. Another dating disaster is here. Kimmy So Brooklyn.
You got Candace Lauren on the line.
Yes, we can't see, but we can feel you, Candace. It's just awesome. We have Dr. Zoom here. We're so excited on this episode to kind of talk to you all about sexual health and all of the things that go along with that. So please, Dr. Zoom, let everyone know about you.
Thank you for having me.
Yes.
Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Som from Mystery Vibe. We started our company over 7 years ago to help everyone keep that mystery in the bedroom. And if they have lost it, bring that back. What we do is we create medical devices in sexual health. We have three products till now, three more coming. So all of them solve very specific topics like pain, erection, improving post-childbirth issues, post-menopausal issues, all of natural things that happen over time with everyone. And we use targeted vibration through adaptable devices to improve blood flow and improve sexual health. And another big part of what we do is write conversational content. So very easy to use, actionable content that people can follow, whether it's on their own or with their partner, and talk about sexual health and find solutions when they need them. So yeah, so that's what we do.
And that's awesome. And I think a lot of times we say sexual health and people will say sexual health, but they don't, it's not just sex, right? People just stop there. Like they forget about, there is a health to it. There are benefits, obviously, that come from that and paying attention to those things. And we would love for you to just go ahead and speak on the importance of the health side of the sexual health phrase.
Yes. It can be as simple as improving sleep or addressing depression or even improving your skin. The quality of your skin, all of that is a direct consequence of better sexual health. So if you have better sexual health and wellness, which could be something as simple as not having pain, not having dryness, very simple things, right? Then you would have better overall general health. And I think that is what often people don't link the two, that something like dryness, which is very common, especially during or after menopause, can be easily addressed just with a very low-cost lubricant, QIA.
Why do you think, because sexual health, I feel like it's one of those topics where people are kind of scared to talk about or investigate. Why do you think people are so hesitant to speak up about their sexual health or even get the help they need? They tend to, brush things under the rug or not necessarily investigate the way they would with a primary care provider.
Yes, it's a really good point. The statistic is only 1 in 4 ever go to a healthcare professional when they have a sexual health issue. Mm. So 75% people, they will suffer in silence for years and years. And that could be anything from pain, from dryness on a male side, erections. All of these issues, people, one, they think... even if they don't do anything about it, it will go away. So that's the most common perception. And secondly, they're just ashamed to talk about it, very shy about it. And it is societal. It is difficult to change. So what we do is, instead of trying to force people to go to a doctor, we try to make it more pleasure-centric. So as an example, when we talk about erectile dysfunction, which is the most common sexual health issue in men, instead of saying, you know, if you have this problem, here's a solution, we don't say, you know, you need to have a problem. We say, would you like to improve your sex? Would you like to improve your erection? You might already be great in bed, but how can we make it better? So where we see the value of presenting sexual health as a wellness and a pleasure topic rather than as a medical topic is addressing that 75% who don't want to admit they have a problem or want to go to a healthcare professional. So we present the medicalness. Like if you think of like a dilator, which is the solution for vaginismus, which is if the entrance of the vaginal opening is small, then penetration can be painful. So if you think of a dilator and, you know, it is stainless steel or plastic things which look scary, unless a doctor says you have to use them, you won't use them on your own. But if we make it very sexy and pleasant and fun, then, and we don't even say, you know, this is for a problem, we say, hey, look, this is to make your sex life better and have more fun, then people are more willing to try it.
It's so interesting too. Yeah. This is not a new topic. I mean, you've seen, or you know, everybody at this point might have seen like those videos of like those old school, you know, black and white videos. So like, sex is not like this new thing. So it's so bizarre that, or I shouldn't say bizarre, but it's so hard to understand again why it is so taboo. But like, what are the things, if people aren't going to you, what are some of the things that will get people to you? Like, you know, people, like, again, this show is really for, you know, talking about dating in your 30s and 40s. And obviously, like you said, 75% of us are walking around with a problem that we're not willing to discuss. So is it just like, now, you know, Candace and I, do we just go and tell our circle of friends, like, hey, don't be afraid to talk about your sexual health? Or like, is there something that you can see that might be happening in people now? Like, now that information is out with social media, for example, do you see like an uptick in people that are finally talking about it? Or think, what advice is like, there to give people so they can start talking about it?
Even in the last 7 years that we have been in the business, a lot has changed, and a lot has changed for the better. So people definitely talk about it more now and do something about it more now than they did 7 years ago. So I think it is definitely time and societal changes. And again, you know, it differs from country to country. So for example, you know, in Scandinavia, sex ed is very different. For example, they talk about pleasure when it comes to sex ed more than just biology, because often sex ed, at least sex ed that I went through, was very much about reproduction, you know, and, right, you know, how do you not get pregnant or get pregnant, and, you know, how do you avoid getting STIs, and that was kind of it. Whereas sex is very wide and diverse, and, you know, things like consent, like I never even knew what that was when I was growing up. No one talked about it in 30 years ago. So so I think definitely things are changing, and the real answer is, if we improve sex ed for kids, then when they grow up, that 75% will hopefully be very little, that, you know, when they have an issue that.
Okay, wait a minute now. I don't know about going. Well, I guess you'll leave that up to the parents. But would you say that in kids, do you think introducing the pleasure route of it is what you're saying?
It's just introducing it holistically, you know, talking about sex as from a obviously biological perspective, from a medical perspective, from a sexual perspective. So for example, a big problem now is teenagers when they first you know, have their girlfriend or boyfriend or you know, any partner, they by then they have a different perception of sex from porn, which makes it difficult for them to understand why they might not be getting aroused by seeing a normal person. But the thing is, if when they were growing up in their teenagers, the sex ed taught them that porn is no different from Harry Potter, it is a fantasy. You know, just like you don't see Harry Potter and think you can fly on a broom, you know, you don't see porn and think everybody behaves or looks like that. But because no one is there to tell them, and you know, it's saying that you can hide porn from someone is, you know, it's not realistic. So assuming that people will always find things, but if they have that education and the context which says that's just a fantasy, that's just Hollywood, that's just a movie, you know, that's fine, you can watch it, no different from watching Iron Man or Harry Potter, but you know, you need to know that that's not real.
So just kind of looking at sexual health as all encompassing, like the,
exactly,
the pleasure.
Exactly. That's the education which, you know, somewhere like Sweden has. So it's already, you know, in action and it works. It's just how do we roll that out? Because these are difficult conversations for whether it's teachers and parents if they're not used to talking about it. Once you get into the hang of it, you know, like we're talking about it, it's not a big deal. It's not, you know, it's not at all controversial, but it is not something that people are used to talking about sex holistically with teenagers, for example, to start with. And if the teenager has missed that, you know, it's never too late. It's something we can talk about at any age. It's doing that. It's how do we talk about sex holistically to anyone of any age. I think that's the thing that will bring about change, where people will think sex is not really anything special. And that's our goal. You know, our goal is not to make sex special. It's to make it no different from talking about food, for example. Right? It's just a very fundamental thing.
We're a long way from that.
The way I see it is food and sex are so similar. You know, they're both things you need, but also pleasure. So, yeah, you know, if you don't eat, you die.
They do evoke the same type of emotion.
No. You're right. That's true.
Totally. If you don't eat, you'll die. You know, if we don't have sex within one generation, the earth will finish, right? So it's survival. But equally, most people don't eat because they don't want to die. They eat because they love food. So most people have sex not because they want to make a baby, but because they love it. So it's so similar. And also, you know, you don't go to a Michelin restaurant every day, but you know, if you never go to a nice fancy restaurant, you always eat at home. You don't spice up your food life. Equally, you know, if you never do anything exciting with your sex life, it will die out.
That was perfect.
I do want to backtrack a little, though, because there was a couple things that you said in terms of, you know, men having erectile dysfunction and, you know, maybe women suffering from vaginal dryness. And I know we kind of discussed on a lot of people being private about it. What do you recommend to people who are in relationships or marriages who are experiencing vaginal dryness or erectile dysfunction? What types of, you know, advice or conversations are you telling them to have to their partner? Because, again, a lot of people are just very uncomfortable talking about sexual health in their body to their partners.
Yes, and you know, even before they get to the solution, they need to talk about it, especially with couples where we find the biggest challenges. Often they know they want to solve something, they get a solution, but they haven't talked about it beforehand with their partner.
Exactly.
And that's where it gets very complicated, unless it's a solution that they can hide. So for example, the reason Viagra is so popular is because if a man is suffering from ED, they can pop the pill without telling anyone and pretend they don't have any problem, right? That's what makes Viagra so successful. And for anything else, you know, like let's say a sex toy being used for dryness, you know, as an example, because obviously if you use a vibrator, it helps you get aroused, get wet much easier than without it. Often, let's say bringing it from a female perspective, if she doesn't have a conversation and she's never used one before in the bedroom, the man might feel, you know, maybe something's wrong in their relationship, and she's trying to improve the relationship by bringing a third piece into the marriage, which obviously is not the case at all. But what we always recommend is talk about things first before you get to the solution. Otherwise, the person might feel they were not consulted. So that's the step one, which is talk about it. And how to talk about it is also quite nuanced. These are generally quite long pieces that we write about step-by-step guides. But just to give you an idea of what a typical way would be, is to share an article about the topic in a very reputable newspaper like New York Times, for example, because you want the power of that media to normalize it, and then send that, or you know, like here we would definitely, you know, use something like a BBC article, because if I share a BBC article about erection, you know, erectile dysfunction or dryness, and I send it to my wife, and I say, oh, I came across this and it's very interesting, you know, have a look, she's not going to think it's odd. Yeah, she's, whereas if I send an article about it from, say, Playboy, then she'll think, why am I reading Playboy, right? Unless I have that relationship with my partner where, you know, that's cool, that's risky. Yeah, so that's step one. And then you always use the word interesting instead of having an opinion when you share it, to find out what is their view. And obviously this gets more complicated if it's the pleasure route and you want to try something that you don't know if your partner will like. So once you've shared the, you know, the article about it, wherever it is, somewhere reputable, then you will have an idea whether they say that's weird or that's interesting. And then you can pursue it further together. And this sounds like a very convoluted route, but that's what we've learned, you know, talking to tens of thousands of customers over the years, is many people, their biggest challenge is they cannot talk about sex-related stuff with their partner, who is their best friend, and they talk about everything, but they cannot talk about sex-related stuff. And often, if they just jump into it, and especially after many years of being together, if they just jump into it.
So then do you think they should start talking about it when they're, like, dating?
Because, yeah, again, that's gonna be my question. Like, should I get
when do you start talking about it, right? Like,
you should start talking about it, definitely. You know, I think sex generally, you know, and health is obviously part of it, but just sex generally is something often people, when they get together, don't align on. And by that I mean, you know, people have different desires and wishes, and they never talk about it out of shame, out of fear of rejection, fear of judgment. And there's a very famous topic on this, which in the sex world is known as CNC, but you know, it's just consensual non-consent. It is a very complex fetish, but one of the most common fetishes in the world, which is play rape. Yeah, and the thing is, no one talks about it, but when you research on it, it is a super common fantasy a lot of couples have. And obviously, you know, anything consensual between adults is totally fine. But couples, even after many years together, find it really difficult to talk about it with each other, and often live their entire lives without trying, you know, fun things with each other that they would have done if they just talked about saying, hey, you know, what are your desires? What have we not tried? And also desires change over the years. You know, when if you meet someone in their 20s, they're different in their 30s and 40s and 50s.
Exactly. Right? Things change, and, right.
Things change, and you know, maybe you have kids, you know, you have menopause, all of these things are natural, nothing, you know, nothing special. So if you don't talk about it, it's no different from assuming that you will have a very fit physique and body without exercising, right? It's not possible if you just, you know, sit on a chair and eat and you know, work on your computer, you will lose your health. So it is the same as if you do nothing about your sex life, it will disappear. So it's so to answer your question, and why it's such a long answer, is conversation is so important that the solution is often conversation alone. And then there are obviously things on top. So now if I get to the second part, the solutions are actually very simple. You know, like dryness solution is find a good lube. It's not difficult, right? You can find it on any shop, any online store. Equally for dryness, you can use really, obviously, really healthy, well-designed vibrators, which are good for your health. And that's the only thing we always talk about, is make sure whatever you're putting inside your body is safe.
Mm-hmm.
Right. There is no right answer as to which vibrator is the right one, right? It doesn't have to be any particular brand. It doesn't have to be any particular type. Just make sure you're buying.
Oh, I was about to start taking notes. I thought you had some good ones.
I know. That was going to be my next question, because I mean, the vibrator industry and all these new toys and things that are coming out, is there one that you recommend, or any new toy that's hot on the market? I recently bought the Rose. And I feel like the Rose has completely changed my life. You know, I was even telling my cousin, I don't even know if I will ever be able to experience pleasure with a man because of the Rose. So, I mean, do you have any, like, a POV on the different toys or
yes, what's yes. That? Yeah. So, that's a really good point. So for everyone, it's a different, so if you think of it as, all a vibrator or a sex toy generally. So sex toy is the over, like all-encompassing term, you know, which covers everything. Vibrator is one part of it, right? A big part of it, but one part of it. So you could have dildos, which is basically something that doesn't vibrate. It's a very fixed thing. You know, it could be made of glass or silicone, etc. Vibrator is something that is typically phallic shape, but could be different shapes, but vibrates. Then you have accessories, you know, like say handcuffs or blindfolds, etc. So all of this falls under sex toys. So what we say to people, especially those coming in to the world of sex toys new, which ironically is the majority, you know, like if you think of the 80-20 rule, 80% people don't really know much about the world of sex toys. They know about it, but they don't know, you know, like everybody knows it exists.
No, I agree, because I really don't know. My knowledge of sex toys is very limited. Yeah. I just saw a bunch of girlfriends post the Rose, and I was like, well, let me try it.
And if they didn't post it, I'd never know about it, because again, it's correct. Such a weird thing that we don't correct. Talk about, but yeah.
Correct. I actually recently one of our fans who had her 55th birthday posted about getting our product as a gift, and every single comment on her Instagram was positive, saying, you know, thanks for telling us about this.
Wow.
That's the thing where people want to talk. People want someone to start talking about it. And when someone does, it's all very positive.
Yeah.
But the worry most people have is they'll post and they'll get negative comments, and they don't. And that is the thing that we work towards changing. So to going back to different type of sex toys. So the within vibrators, the two main categories are things that vibrate and things that suck. So there's suction toys and there's vibration toys. Yeah. Very much a personal preference. Some people prefer suction. So suction is very much focused on clitoral stimulation. So it is like a little circular thing that has a very small vacuum pump, which creates pulsating suction and might have a little bit of vibration. So that's a whole category of products. And then vibrators is a whole category of products. Now, within vibrators, the common types would be clitoral stimulator, which is surprisingly difficult to get because clitoral stimulation is really personal, in the sense that what is strong for someone might be ineffective for someone else. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because the clit is such a sensitive organ. So it's one of those things where you have to try, various products to see what works for you. So that's one type. The other one is the G-spot stimulator, which I think is the simpler of the products and probably the easiest product to start with, is something that can be inserted and helps you discover your G-spot and deliver vibrations there, because that's one of those things where maybe your fingers can't do or difficult to do and very likely quite difficult to do with penetrative sex, because it's not always easy to stimulate the G-spot through intercourse, which is why 90% of women don't orgasm.
Hold on, you're breaking up a little.
Hello?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because I'm personally, I always have this anxiety about not being able to achieve an orgasm. So I've really gone through most of my sexual life thinking, oh my God, what's wrong with me? Why am I not having orgasms the way other women seem to have? And then I've read this article about how it's extremely hard for a lot of women to have orgasms. Is there anything that you recommend women do to achieve that orgasm?
Yes, that's such a good topic, and I'm glad you brought it up. So often people think of sexual health as things like, what we were talking about, pain, erectile dysfunction, dryness, all of those things are very obvious. However, the biggest topic is, the technical term is arousal disorder. And it is often looked as a pleasure topic and not a health topic, but which is very wrong. So arousal disorder is a very significant sexual health issue. And like you said, most women have that issue. And even if they don't have it all the time, they have it often. What we find and, what the evidence suggests is generally all in the mind, or often all in the mind. What that means is, you have a lot of things going on in your head. You're busy. You have stress. And that's what blocks the orgasm from happening. And because it has happened to you where, you couldn't get past that barrier of orgasm, then every time you try, you feel like you won't get there, and that makes it worse, as in you get into this loop. So the real answer to that is de-stressing, breathing, doing breathing exercises, using meditation apps, like things to make your mind calm.
Meditation apps, that's actually a very good one, huh? Yeah.
Yes, because all you are trying to do is make your brain a happy place to feel relaxed and to let go and not stress about the fact that you couldn't orgasm last time, and also to make the journey to orgasm the main part of your either sex with someone or yourself. you know, the whole arousal and the pleasure of it rather than the finish. So if you make that the pleasure, the journey to orgasm as your pleasurable bit, you know, then you're less worried about what happens in the end, and then you're more likely to have the finish. So obviously anything to top it up helps. So you know, it's for some people it might be wine, you know, having some wine helps them relax more. For some people it might be CBD, where it's legal, obviously. For some people it might be listening to erotic stories, you know, lying back in bed. There are lots of really good apps now where you can listen to erotic audio, or watching porn.
Right.
Definitely, you know, with lubes and vibrators. So as much help as you can get, but with a clear mind.
And so do you think you should always find out? I guess you should learn about yourself first, right? Because even if you're having this conversation with a partner or with you know, someone from the opposite sex, if that's what you're into, a lot of the times a guy's like, you don't need that. You got me and I can show you how to do this, or I can show you how to find whatever spot. But then it's like, is it best to say, okay, that's fine, but I need to figure out what works for me. And then have the conversation. And I think that's a lot of us think the solution is to just keep doing it and keep trying it, and then that's your answer.
No, you're absolutely spot on. We always say the first thing is self-discovery, self-love, self-care, and give yourself the time. And then, because if you don't have that yet with yourself, you know, your orgasm yourself, and you haven't figured that out, then it's very difficult to do that with someone else. So,
exactly.
You know, just give yourself time to enjoy yourself and your self-discovery. And then with your partner, it's taking that to the next level. You're absolutely right. Definitely focus on yourself. Give your me time.
Is there a favorite position or a favorite thing that you know that couples like to do outside of, I don't know, something that would be hard to believe or something that's kind of entertaining or interesting?
Position in terms of stimulation?
Yes.
So the most effective position, especially when it comes to G-spot stimulation, is there's a technical term for it, but it's basically the man. So the woman's lying on a pillow. That's ideal. So the woman's lying on her tummy. Yeah. But there's a pillow. They can just use a normal pillow. They don't have to buy a special. Mm-hmm. You can buy a special sex pillow, which is like a triangular pillow, but those things could be quite expensive. So you could just use a normal pillow or maybe two pillows. And the reason that's so important is because the G-spot is on the front of the vaginal wall. It's around 2 to 3 inches from the entrance. And having a pillow or something underneath your tummy or in that area, the abdomen, helps push it up a bit.
Mm.
So, and then that angle is really effective. And then the man squats behind her and then penetrates her at an angle. And that's the most effective way to reach the G-spot and stimulate it. So very specific. So
noted.
Yeah. Doggy, but not quite, yeah.
So it's like a derivative of doggy style.
Yes, it is a derivative of doggy, but with the woman raised quite a bit. So she's like a triangle, and the man, you know, squatting and penetrating at an angle. Yeah.
Are there any particular positions that you recommend for a couple trying to conceive a child?
Well, everyone says the missionary is supposed to be the most effective for children. So it's one of those things where we...
Is that a thing? Can positions help with that?
Well, that's what occurred. It could be an old wives' tale. That's why I'm asking.
It could be. I don't know that answer whether it's true or false, but that's what we come across. It's not something we researched. It's not an area we do work on, as in like pregnancy advice, because there's so much out there. You know, that's not what we do. But we have had lots of nice stories about people who got pregnant with the help of our devices. Like I remember one, so a man had colon cancer, and post surgery he was fully recovered, which is great, but as a result of the surgery he couldn't get erect anymore, and he was only 40 and he wanted to have babies.
Oh man.
And then he used our Tenuto device, which is a vibrator that expands and wraps around the penis, creates an erection, holds the erection, stimulates the labia. So it does all of these things. It's a really cool device. And but the most important part is, unlike a cock ring, which is circular and it goes all around the penis, it is a stretchy silicone which has a gap in the bottom. The gap is to allow the seminal fluid to pass through the penis, which is obviously the most important thing to get pregnant. And he could get erect, stay erect, and ejaculate, and have a baby. So he was very excited about that. So that's
the amazing
kind of stuff we get very excited about when you know, we can improve people's lives. Yeah.
No, that's amazing.
That's great to hear.
Is there anything, and you know, we're wrapping up soon, but is there anything that you think that are myths that are out there, or anything that's bad that people might be doing when it comes to sexual health that we need to kind of get out of people's minds that they're doing, or that might be in mind?
I mean, the thing is, there's obviously nothing good or bad, but I think one of the biggest areas of which is untapped is anal pleasure. And the reason we talk about that is because the number one cancer in men is prostate cancer. And it's very, very common. And the solution is so simple that, you know, it just beggars belief that so many people have prostate cancer. And just to very quickly talk about something very related is breast cancer. You know, women get advice that you use your fingers to look for lumps in your breast. And, you know, if you have one, you massage them, because it's all to do with secretions building up, right? Prostate is exactly the same. Secretions build up, and then over time they become cancerous. And then if you go to a urologist, who will obviously, you know, help you with prostate cancer issues, what they have to do is, you know, wear a glove, put a finger up the bum, and massage the prostate. That is the medical thing, right? It's not complicated. So, however, most men, especially straight men, are extremely scared of anything to do with their anus. Yeah.
Right.
And the thing is, they are, but if you tell them, hey, look, you know, forget about pleasure. It is massively, so the P spot, which is the prostate, is the equivalent of the G spot. You know, it's an incredibly pleasurable area.
Exactly.
However, even if you don't talk about the pleasure element, because it is, if it's scary to a man, you know, pleasure isn't going to help them convert. But if you tell them, do you want to avoid having prostate cancer? Then they will be like, okay, fine, you know, I need to do something about it.
That's funny. So, I thought that if you told them the pleasure part, it would be helpful, but actually that makes more sense too. So
our route is always, how can we educate people so they do the things that is best for them? You know, like massaging your prostate is what medically doctors do. It's proven, and it is easy and it's fun. Like, why wouldn't you do it?
Right. my gosh, this was really great. Thank you so much, Candace. Did you have anything else that you wanted to add?
Or? No, I mean, I've pretty much been taking notes, as you know.
Right. Right. Well, we have a shopping date this weekend, girl.
So I guess with that being said, because I know we are kind of running out of time, if you want to kind of share your Instagram handle, where people can come to
the website, the Mystery Vibe. Yeah.
Yes, it's all very simple. Everything is Mystery Vibe. Mystery, as in, you know, bringing a mystery back into the bedroom, and Vibe. So Mystery Vibe is our Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, website, mysteryvibe.com, everything. And Black Friday started. So, you know,
awesome.
We get very excited about Black Friday because our goal is making everything we do accessible. And because we're FDA medical devices, they're expensive. You know, like Crescendo, which is the most popular device, is normally $200 because it's a medical device. But on Black Friday, it's like $129. So it's pretty big discounts. Yeah.
Awesome.
Black Friday is already live. So definitely, definitely go for it.
Well, there it is. Black Friday sales, mystery vibe. I'm your girl, Candace Lauren.
Kimmy So Brooklyn here.
And thank you, Dr. Som, for joining another dating disaster.
Thank you for having me.
Yes.
ADD. ADD. Another dating disaster. A platform that discusses what a shit show dating can be, while sharing humor, insight, and stories with our listeners. At the same time, keeping the faith in one day being booed up. Pray for us.